Welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast, the podcast in which Stephen Altrogi, Barnabas Piper, and Ted Cluck cheerfully rant about all the things that don't matter all that much. And now, buckle up for today's episode.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I think this is episode number 54. I'm Stephen Altrogi, the host, along with my co-hosts, Ted Cluck, Barnabas, Piper. Guys, it's been a busy week for all of us. Ted, teaching at Union is in full swing. How was week number one?
Oh, it was amazing, man. It was great. I have amazing students, and as we've mentioned before, I have a great office. So those two things have really combined to make it a great week. And our 54th episode, which, you know, as anybody in the radio / podcast business knows, 54 is really special.
Now, you guys,
I'm glad you brought attention to that.
And if we get to 100 episodes, and this is kind of standard sitcom stuff, but I think It applies here. If we get to 100 episodes, we can basically retire and go. The show can go into syndication.
That would be great. Yeah, I mean, by that point, you know, we will have made like $2,500. You know, we can just live off the fat of that windfall for the rest of our lives, guys. Think about that. You know,
I mean, if you drop that in an account and start getting like 0.02% compound interest on it, I mean, you may be able to buy a car by the time you retire.
Dude, forget about it, man. Now you're talking crazy.
This is turning into like one of those accounting lessons I had like in high school. Yeah.
You were clearly homeschooled because nobody else got accounting in high school.
Maybe it was college.
You were clearly homeschooled in college because
because of how you are.
Yeah.
Because of how I am.
Because of your personality.
Because of my stiff, like, socially awkward personality. That's clearly. Yeah. Well, thanks. I appreciate that. Ted, I'm curious for you now, as a professor, I had kind of like two kind of opening week professors in college. One was like the I've been doing this way too long professor who,
oh, nice, yeah.
You know, it was the guy who for the first week, he somehow managed to drag the syllabus explanation out into two classes.
Oh, yeah.
And then you watched like an intro video to the class.
Oh, yeah.
Then
yeah.
There was the other guy who was, it kind of went either one way or another. It was either a really young guy who was like eager to like make a mark, or it was the guy who was just like, I hate students. And that kind of professor would always assign homework on day one of class.
Yeah.
So where do you fall in that spectrum?
Dude, I can honestly say I hope that I'm neither guy, you know, and I feel like assigned homework on the first day often goes with like completely bitter, jaded, broken down, you know, guy who's mad that he never accomplished anything in industry and, you know, just, yeah. I mean, those two things sort of hand in hand.
The guy who's been like sitting on a book manuscript for 20 years that he
wrote.
The guy
who's been like, I know all this theory, but no one will buy my book. Dang it. I don't know. I don't think I'm either guy, man. My first days are, you know, I go through the syllabus as fast as possible because I figure that's the most boring part. And then
it's also the part that they ought to be able to read. That's why you give it to them.
Yeah. And being that I teach a journalism class, usually on the first day I interview my students. So
I like that. It's like it's like immersive teaching.
It is. Yeah. I just interview everyone. We chat like gentlemen and then it kind of sets the tone for the rest of the semester. So it's a good vibe, man. I enjoy it.
Are you one of those professors that like tries way too hard to like get in with his students and be cool with his students? Do you ever have
If I was that kind of professor, I probably A, wouldn't be aware of it, and B, wouldn't admit to it. But yeah, I probably am.
Do you remember that episode of The Office where Michael keeps trying to get invited to the party at Jim's house?
And, dude, of course, man.
And he
goes
into the break room and everyone's eating lunch and he sits down to eat lunch with them. And he's like, you know what was the best in college? The parties. Man, like everybody was invited. Professors, students. And then someone was like, the professors got invited to the parties? So that's kind of what I imagine you like with your students, kind of like Michael Scott with your students.
Yeah, on the first day, I just ask, can I go to the parties? You know, I cut through all the subtlety.
It is a Baptist school. which yeah. means the party means something entirely different there than it does most places. It involves
means like we're eating pizza and playing Settlers of Catan. So it would actually be fine for me to be there.
It's a Scrabble tournament.
That's yeah. right. Yeah, Welsh's grape juice is the hardest thing in the drink menu.
Exactly.
Oh, that's brilliant. Brilliant. All right. Well, we got some fun topics to talk about today. First up on the list, I can't remember if this was a listener suggested one or not, but it's in the news and a lot of people are inordinately outraged about it. I don't know. At least it strikes me as inordinate, but I could be wrong. Target recently announced that they are taking off the gender labels. Is it for their toy aisles, Barnabas? I think it's the toy aisles.
Yeah, I think it's it's just specifically toys. So I think they will still have boys and girls clothes, just not toys.
So like it's no longer politically correct to say a dump truck is a boy, a toy for boys.
Right.
So that's, you know, Target
that is a toy for those who like trucks.
Right. It's a toy for those who like dump trucks, most of whom will be boys, but hey, let's not push it too far. So Barnabas, as a dad of two girls, and you're on the internet a fair amount, first of all, did you see any outrage on the internet about this subject?
Yes, but it made me laugh. Because it seems to me that people think that their children figure out their gender by what Target's toys tell them. So based on that assumption, my girls will no longer know that they are girls starting as the moment that the Barbie dolls become gender-neutral toys, because they won't know where to look for toys. They will no longer know what they like. They won't have any preference. They won't know how to self-identify or otherwise identify. It's really going to be a chaotic experience, I think.
And you, as the parent, really aren't going to know what toys to get them, because
yeah, I mean, it looks like I'm just going to have to just like stick to t-shirts and things, because those are still labeled.
Now let me ask you a question honestly, like, okay, why do you think there is such outrage? I don't know, it's limited to certain circles, but why do you feel like people are so outraged about this? Because obviously for you and me it seems a little silly.
I think people are outraged because it is peripherally related to all of the other sort of gender confusion and just sort of doing away with anything related to manhood, womanhood, specific genders. You know, there's the whole Caitlyn Jenner thing. There's just all of these things going on where traditional gender understanding, and I don't mean like gender roles, but just like understanding of God created them male and female, is being done away with. And I think that's true. But the fact that Target decided to take the labels off toys, to me, is not sort of the straw that broke the camel's back. It was sort of more just like kids still know what they like. And they're going to go to the G.I. Joes or the Barbies. They're going to go to the footballs or they're going to go to the tennis rackets. Like, they don't really care. And they're going to pick the colors that they like, too. But you know what? Kids already do that. Like, my daughters will pick out a blue toy or a blue shirt if they like blue more than pink. And that's okay. So that this to me seems to be lumped in with a larger cultural issue, and people are looking at it as like the latest symptom of America going to hell, and I'm just kind of like, this is not that big of a deal compared to some other issues.
Compared to like all these horrendous like Planned Parenthood things.
Yeah.
I mean, they're like, you're right, it does seem out of proportion.
Let's devote our outrage to the death of innocent babies. I think that's a place that deserves all that we can give it and more. And Target saying that these are children's toys instead of boys or girls' toys, it doesn't rank.
Plus, I mean, I think you're really right when it's like that decision by Target really has zero bearing on my children and what they do. Like, my kids, my girls, they don't even know, I don't think, that like the toys are broken down into boy and girl, or were broken down into that. They just know where they want to go. They want to go to the Barbie aisle for my kids.
I mean, Ted is the one of us who is raising boys, and so he can speak to the other side of this coin, but I don't think I ever taught my children to like certain toys. I'm sure that subtly I influenced them, but like, I never made them play with dolls and dresses and princess things. That was the stuff they sprinted to when they got into Toys R Us. Like, they didn't like the movie Cars. They loved the movie Frozen. This just happened. I did not tell them to do this, which means that this whole Target thing just kind of makes me shrug and go, okay, they're still going to like the same things. Ted, did you see the same thing in your boys growing up?
Dude, totally. For example, like, we are not gun people. I mean, sort of.
This having, is exactly what my parents said, too. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, having guns, like, being gun people, being into all that, like, that's not even on our radar. I mean, no offense to people who are, but my boys love guns, man. They wanted airsoft guns. They want, you know, Nerf guns. They want every kind of gun you can get your hands on because they're little boys, you know?
And
so,
and when they were five, they turned everything into a gun. I mean,
absolutely. The piece of toast, the Pop-Tart, the, you know.
Exactly. I mean, I did the same thing. And yeah. I had older brothers, and so I'm sure I was influenced in that. But, like, you're just drawn to certain things.
Sure, sure.
And Target doesn't get to tell me what to be drawn to. So this doesn't actually confuse anything for me or for my kids.
My parents were, when I was young and when my brothers and I were young, they were, you know, they tried to, like, not let us turn things into guns because they didn't want us doing violent things. But then they eventually just realized exactly what you guys said, that we basically would turn anything and everything into a gun. Even if they wouldn't buy us toy guns, we're taking sticks, we're taking, yeah, pieces of toast, Pop-Tarts, everything's a gun.
Oh, my, and when I was, yeah, my parents wouldn't buy me toy guns, and I think it was mostly an excuse to not waste money on things, but rather than them worrying that I was going to be a violent kid. But my dad let me use all his non-power tools, and so we had this huge pile behind our garage of, like, scrap lumber, so I would build, like, Tommy guns out of 2x2s and you know, slat boards and all this stuff, and, like, build myself an arsenal of toy guns. So I was not only building things in a stereotypically boyish fashion, I was also building weapons in a stereotypically boyish fashion, and nobody showed me how to do that. I just did it because I wanted to, because I was a boy. And my girls would never in a million years dream of doing that. I don't think I've ever seen my girls pretend to use anything as a gun.
That's true. I don't think I have either.
Magic wand, yes. Gun, no.
Yeah, my girls are always turning me into stuff.
Yep.
With their magic wand. Ted, have you heard anyone, like, is this even a talking point at Union at all?
Dude, no, man. Nobody has mentioned it.
Isn't it funny how just stuff, I feel like stuff just takes on this online outrage kind of thing? Where totally. When you get into real life, like, no one's even talking about it.
Dude, something like this was made for being online, though, because it is such a great headline, which, as Barnabas pointed out, really doesn't mean anything. But it's a great headline. You know, Target and gender-neutral toys. And, I mean, people are sort of seduced by the, you know, the outlandishness of that headline when in fact nothing really changes. Now, I feel like if Target's going to truly be gender-neutral, they should just throw all of their products in every department, like in a pile. You know what I mean? There should be no delineation at all. So you could get a pair of, like, you know, vice grips and a quart of 10W30 and a Barbie and like a bath mat all in the same section. You know,
if they're going to be fair,
that's called Walmart.
Yeah, exactly. And you also get the flu if it's Walmart. Oh goodness, man.
Well, let's talk about something else that is making a little bit of headlines. At least I thought it was interesting. If you're on social media at all, you'll notice that, and we haven't talked about Drisky Business for a while, but you'll notice that one Mark Driscoll is back online. He's blogging. He's tweeting. He's sort of leading a Bible study through Ecclesiastes, and I believe he's getting ready to plant a church in Phoenix. Barnabas, are those details correct? Do you know?
As far as I know, yeah, I'm actually on his website right now, which is markdriscoll.org. So let's blow his site up. And no, yeah, he's got sermons on there from the last several weeks. So he's preaching somewhere. I don't know if it's a new church plant or what, but,
it's an undisclosed location, I think.
Yeah, he's sort of like the Bill Simmons of the preaching world. You know,
dude, he is. Yeah.
He left the major organization, went rogue. He's sort of independent. His Twitter account looks a little different than it used to, kind of like Simmons. Simmons has kind of turned into like the cranky old man on Twitter. Driscoll is more like the sage prophet at this point. And yeah, it's interesting.
You know what's funny about you know what's funny about Drisk, man? I'm looking at the site now. He's gotten way more stylish as the years have gone by. In that, like, in the beginning, I feel like it was all like Affliction and Tap Out t-shirts and like silver necklaces and stuff like that. And now he's all kind of Portlandia, you know? It's like layers upon layers. Yes. And like a vest,
yeah,
over
it's
a
vest
sweater
every time.
Over a, yeah, a vest, a sweater, a sport jacket, you know, another sport jacket.
He's sort of he really enjoys the Reservoir Dogs look. That, yeah, sort of like skinny tie, black, or I don't even know if they wore ties, but like the black suit, white shirt, like the Chuck Taylors along with it.
Right.
So it's, yeah, he's definitely not the combat boots, black jeans, Affliction t-shirt.
He's not the,
yeah,
like,
no, he's kind of remade himself, man. He's a little less cage fighting and,
yeah,
a little
more,
like,
he's not the ultimate, you know, fighting pastor anymore.
Yeah, he's a little more like veggie wrap now, man. A little more. A little more Portlandia about the whole thing.
I will say this, like, we make jokes about it, but I really hope he successfully bounces back, because,
yeah, me,
I mean,
too.
For his sake, for his family's sake, for his ministry's sake, because he, yes, a lot of people were hurt, and anytime you bring up Driscoll and don't say violent, hateful things about him, somebody will point out that some people got hurt. I know this,
yeah,
but that doesn't mean that I wouldn't love to see him bounce back and have a better, more effective impact than he had previously. Because he is a gifted, gifted preacher. He's a brilliant man. And as far as I know, he's got a great family, and I would love to see all of them thrive. And so if he comes back and has sort of a refined version of his former self, a gentler version, I would be so happy. I think it'd be great.
Yeah, I think I love that attitude, because I think you can go one of a couple directions with this, but some people are like, they're already like on the Driscoll watch, and they're like mapping his, you know, it's almost like the Santa Claus watch, where they're mapping his location. And, but I totally agree. Like, I hope for the sake of him, of the gospel, of his ministry, that he does come back, and he comes back, you know, learning things that God has taught him. Because you're totally right, he's gifted. I think it's a, I don't know, I just think it's a foolish attitude to just be like, oh, Driscoll, we got to keep him out of that. You know, you're deceived if you're following him. I mean, I just think if you're paying attention, just listen carefully to what he says. See if, you know, see what God is doing in him. So I don't know, Ted, how do you take the Driscoll comeback?
Dude, Barnabas said it best, man. I mean, I wish the guy the best. I really do. Like, I really hope. And you hope that for everybody. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the gospel is about, you know, making mistakes, sinning, not living a perfect life, and being redeemed by Christ, man. And, I mean, if people can show the grace to welcome Mark Driscoll back with open arms, then I think it glorifies Christ and it celebrates the gospel, and that's what we want to see done, man. And I think, you know, if you don't want to see that done, if you sort of want to see Mark Driscoll twist and suffer more, like, I think you really need to check your spirit and the condition of your heart. And yeah, I mean, it's entertainment at some level, guys, which is why we're talking about it. But it's also, you know, it's a, one of God's children, and he's trying to put things back together. So, you know, all the best to the guy.
Now, what do you guys make of, like, for example, I think it was last month or maybe the month before, he was slated to speak at the Hillsong Conference, and there was like a sort of an uproar. I think there might have even been a petition to have him removed from the docket, and he was. They took him off the docket. What do you guys make of that?
I wonder if he still got some money. I mean, that's what I would ask if I got kicked off the docket. Am I still getting paid? But
I feel like it just fits people's sort of irrational outrage, like the outrage culture that we have, where once a snowball is rolling, there's almost no stopping it. And when it comes to people leaving the ministry, people don't, they're never allowed back. unless they go to some backwater where people don't really know what happened and none of us have to pay attention to them. Like, so for somebody to fall from prominence, and in Driscoll's case, it's an interesting case because it wasn't sexually related, which tends to be the killer of all things ministry. And so it's just, how come I get to be the arbiter of when somebody is ready to be back in ministry? That's what I'm not quite sure of. I don't know if he's ready or not, but because I don't know, I shouldn't have definitive say.
Yeah, and don't you guys feel like in some ways there's a sense where like people want to see, almost like people want to see the guy punished a certain amount before he's somehow done. It's almost like he has to do his time in jail. You know what I mean? Like
except when people get out of jail, they're not really welcome back either. Like, yes, they did their time, but they're sure as heck not going to get a job.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, I mean, but that's a similar kind of thing. It's like, yeah, you're welcome to come back. Just don't expect anybody to trust you ever is kind of the attitude. And I understand that when trust is broken, it's very hard to rebuild, but it's an odd thing that we hold our trust so dearly that somebody we don't even have a relationship with, we just have this sort of vitriolic response to it. It's a strange phenomenon. I mean, that's why I say I really want him to be able to come back, just to prove to some haters that they need to shut up.
I think that should be your tagline for your life.
Prove to haters that they need to shut up?
Yeah. That could be your ministry just in general.
Dude, I love it. I'll go with that.
You exist. Barnabas Piper said, I can almost hear your dad saying it.
Oh, thank you. Yes, let's bring him into this. That's my favorite.
Well, yeah, we do. I just feel like it's my job to constantly remind you that you've only gotten where you are because of riding the coattails of your dad.
Well, as far as I know, that was the last article that I was involved in at our dear friends at the Pulpit and Pen blog. They said, I only have the job I have at Lifeway because of who my dad is. They don't really know what I do, et cetera. So I'm really glad have me on this. I'm really glad you have me on this podcast because I'm really pretty worthless anywhere else.
Does everybody need to know what everybody does? I don't know what anybody does. You know what I mean? Like, I know that my friends work for certain places, but I don't know what they do, you know?
The people who write that blog live in, like, rural Montana, which means that I think they just got electricity, like, 4 years ago. And so I'm not sure that they figured out what most of the world does.
I'm trying to find... When was the article about you? I'm trying to find it.
Well, I don't know. I blocked them on Twitter and don't make it a point to go to that site. It was during the whole sort of Confederate flag thing. They wrote an article accusing me of liking felonies and
which you do.
And included, clearly, I love it. And then included that as sort of their intro. So this guy who's worthless except for his dad's last name loves felonies. That could be it. If my tagline is convincing haters they need to shut up, that could be my bio.
Man, these guys write like crazy. There's like,
I think you could just drop the word like. And they just write crazy.
I keep scrolling and scrolling. I still can't find the article. I'll have to go and search it up.
When you feel like taking your crazy pills?
When I have some free time. All right. Well, let's move on to we're gonna do something. You know, I think most people when they think about being an author, you know, they think they think it's glamorous. They think it's, you know, we get to do all the radio interviews, we get to talk to people. You know, Ted, I think people, when they look at you, they see a life of glamour and ease.
Well, and they're right, largely.
Yeah, you know? I mean, you're living the high life of the author. You're riding in limos. But, you know, what people don't see is just... they don't see behind the scenes of what it's really like to do a radio interview. And so we're going to, Ted, why don't you intro this segment a little bit for us? Tell us what we're going to do.
Well, guys, what we're going to do today is an interview segment in which I interview both of you about your books. And the stipulation being I have to give the worst interview questions ever. So I have to act as though I'm the worst, least prepared radio interviewer in the industry, which unfortunately
happens a lot.
It happens all the time. I've done many, many interviews with these guys, so I feel like I'm pretty prepared for this. You know, I've done a lot of prep for this episode. So
you're prepared to be the least prepared.
Yeah. So if you guys would, I mean, just kind of imagine with me that we're in studio. You're very excited that you're authors and you've been asked to be on a radio program about your books. And whenever you're ready, I'll get started. Okay.
Yeah. Just real quick, what is this? What's your show called? Your radio show?
Man, you're putting me on the spot here.
The Ted Kluck Hour of Power.
I think it's got to be something like Sunshine in the Mornings with Ted Kluck.
Sunshine in the Mornings with Ted Kluck, sponsored by Pulpit and Pen. whatever. .org.
All right, let's do it. I'm ready.
Guys, welcome to Sunshine in the Morning with Ted Kluck. It is a privilege today to have with me authors Barnabas Piper and Stephen Altrogi.
Man, I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, good, Stephen. I'm glad you're excited to be here. And we're going to start with Barnabas. Barnabas, I see here that you've written a book called The Pastor's Kid. And let me see if I get this name right. It looks here, just reading your bio, like your father's name is John Piper. Is that correct?
It is correct. Yes, that is my father's name.
Now, tell me, what was it like growing up with John Piper?
It was a lot like having a dad who raised me, and he was a pastor, and some people knew who he was, and that's sort of where some of the ideas for the book came out of.
Stephen, I'm going to ask you a question about your book, Game Day for the Glory of God. This was a book about sports. Now, I noticed that in terms of the look and feel of the book and even the content, it's a lot like another favorite author of mine. It's a lot like Ted Kluck's book, The Reason for Sports, A Christian Fanifesto. Were you inspired in any way by that book? Did you sort of co-opt some of the ideas or concepts? Talk about that.
Well, Ted, it's funny that you should ask. My book actually came out first, before Ted's book. Although I do believe Ted's material was written first because it showed up in Sports Spectrum. Ted's book is actually just sort of a compilation of stuff he had already written. So he was sort
things
of...
Things that were already wildly popular that the publisher figured that they could already sell.
It was sort of a double-dipping moneymaker for him.
Well, that's Ted Kluck in a nutshell, you know. Now, Stephen, I want to stay with you here, and I want to talk about a book that you wrote called Create. Now, I was under the impression that that book was written by John Acuff, and it looks here, I'm just looking on Amazon, and it appears that you wrote it. Talk about that.
Well, I did write it, actually. That's why I'm the author.
That's why your name is on the cover in like 4-point font, along with the subtitle. Can you just read the subtitle for me? Because I literally can't even see it here on the cover.
I don't have it in front of me, but I think the subtitle is "Stop Making Excuses and Start Making Stuff."
Ah, all right.
That does sound like a John Acuff title, actually.
But I do want to just point out again, it seems like maybe, Ted, you're missing this. I wrote that first before John wrote anything other than stuff Christians like.
Now, so you're insinuating there that you are kind of the inspiration by inspiration behind John Acuff's work. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, I don't know if you would call me an inspiration or more of like a distanced mentor, I would say, is probably a better description of what I am to him. But, I mean, you'll have to ask him about that. But I think he would agree.
Now, Barnabas, let's talk about your book, Help My Unbelief, Why Doubt is Not the Enemy of Faith. Now, define doubt.
Well, Ted, that's a fairly difficult question. I would define doubt as, at its very basis, just being uncertain of something, just not knowing the answer. And so if you're uncertain, that's not necessarily right or wrong. It just means you lack complete assurance that something is or is going to happen.
You know, I'm so glad you said that, and I'm so excited to have you on the program today, Barnabas, and I'm so excited to dig into this book. And the way that I would like to do that is to just have you read for me, if you would, each chapter title and just explain a little bit about each chapter. Can you do that?
Well,
let's start with chapter one.
I would be thrilled to do that. Would you be willing to read the chapter titles for me, and then I could give you just a little blurb on each one? It'll, I think the listeners will really appreciate this.
You know what, Barnabas? I would love to do that for you, except that Amazon is not letting me see the table of contents page. So we're going to have to take this out in post.
All right. Well, we will. We'll have to. Well, let's. We can just make an adjustment on the fly, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Stephen, talk to me about your book, My Friend, My Hero, My Dad.
Well, I wrote that book about my dad.
Mm.
And yeah, that's
tell us about your dad.
Well, he raised me kind of like Barnabas' dad.
Mm.
He was a
you know, they have so much in common.
You know, not to hijack this, but I did get the table of contents for Barnabas' book if you'd like me to read those for him.
Yeah, why don't you?
Okay. Barnabas, chapter one is tension.
Well, that is about the tension between faith and doubt.
I see. I like what you did with that word choice there. That was good.
Yeah, I tried to paint a word picture with it. It's sort of a concise metaphor, if you will.
Chapter two is, what is belief?
That is a question that the chapter goes on to answer.
Now,
what is belief?
Now, I'm just going to skip to the end here, because I think this is what we really want to get to. What is extras?
Extras?
Yes.
That's like on a DVD when you go to the menu and you get like the outtakes or the additional endings. It's kind of like that, but in book form.
Does this have, so this is like an alternate ending for your book?
Yeah, it's like a choose your own adventure, if you will.
I see.
So you get to kind of pick what version of belief is right for you.
I see. Sorry, Ted. Now turning it back over to you,
Stephen. I'm just looking at your impressive catalog here of books, and I have a question. I'd like you to speak to this. My question is, where do you get all the people to review your books? I just see that every book has a lot of reviews. And where do you have a list? Like, where do you get all the people? Because I feel
is
like my
part
listeners
of a homeschool
are
family.
Yeah, exactly.
Most
14, 15 of them are siblings, right?
I was going to say most of them are my siblings.
Okay.
The others are the people in my church who have a covering over me.
Mm. And by covering over you, you mean a computer and an email address?
Or yeah, that.
Yeah,
that's exactly what it was. No, I just have a lot of people who are very kind and review my books.
Mm. Do you ask them to do it, or do they do it like out of the goodness of their own hearts?
Oh, it's both.
Or is it a combination of both?
It's a combination of both, I must say.
Do you pay people to review your books?
Okay, now you're getting personal.
Dun, 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 dun. This is a scandal.
No, I don't pay people to
Well, I mean, Ted, you accused him of plagiarism earlier. He plagiarized Ted Kluck's work. It looks like there might be some overlap with John Acuff's work, and it just follows that he may pay people to say positive things about his books.
Mm.
I'm mainly wondering because I'm wondering why he's never paid me to say nice things about his books.
Because, yeah, seriously, I would do that.
Well, a couple reasons, because I know you guys will do it for free. I know Ted will do it in like 20 seconds or less.
I'll do it without even looking at the book.
I know.
Over with.
Which is a lot like this interview.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, okay, speaking of wanting it over with, let's wrap up this interview and let's close out the podcast with a couple new people left some reviews on our podcast. A couple new reviews.
Oh, can I say something about reviews real quick?
Yes.
So last week there was a gentleman who said he liked the podcast, wished it would be longer because he sits at work and listens to them all day. And I poked some fun at that gentleman. Well, I heard from him, sort of. I heard two things. One was from a couple other people who said, you'd be surprised how many people listen to podcasts all day. You're right. I would be very surprised. And to all of you, I meant no offense, but I still think that's kind of funny. And to the particular gentleman whose name I now know but won't share for his disclosure, I hope I didn't call you any names, but I did find your review funny. So I just thought it was funny that we heard back from somebody who we had poked a little bit.
I think it's awesome that we heard back from people.
Yes.
Like, like, honestly, and I say this with no sarcasm, I feel like it's kind of sad that I have to, like, preface a remark with that. But I'm, like, super grateful for people that listen and review. Like, there was a couple people on Twitter, like, who they've mentioned, like, just how much they like the podcast. And I'm like, wow, that's – I'm really grateful for that. Like, that you even care to, like, tell us. I don't know. That just – I think that's cool.
It's a good thing that happens on Twitter. They do happen. Some good news. It is.
Okay, so a couple quick reviews. Fred by Grace says, it's a fun listen. 5 stars. I'm really enjoying listening to you guys. Thanks for sharing. Smiley face. Ooh, the thanks for
Nice.
Thanks for sharing. That's like what I would say in small group whenever someone said something really bad. Thanks for sharing.
Fred by Grace. Can we parse that real quick? So is that like his name was graciously given to him? He exists by grace. His mother's name is Grace.
All the above.
Okay, good. All right, glad we nailed that down.
Next is Angie Grimmett. So it seems like we have a female listener here. And she says, this is my favorite podcast of all time.
Also, wow. she is a very active tweeter and interactive on Twitter with us at the podcast handle at Happy Rant Pod. So she's that's a real person and not just Ted going on and writing reviews for us.
It's witty, interesting.
Which is the thing I do.
It's witty. Yeah, that's what you do in your spare time. You write reviews of podcasts. Witty, interesting, and smart, she says. And then here's one from Warrior Poet 06. Oh man, gotta love that name. I'm a faithful subscriber to these guys. I enjoy
that Drisky's handle that he got like savaged for not too long ago.
Well, I mean, it would make sense because we talk about him a ton. So if he listens to us and loves us, it only follows.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Steven.
Drisky, if you're listening, we love you, Warrior Poet 06. I'm a faithful subscriber to these guys. I enjoy the relaxed, comical, and insightful perspectives these fellas bring to the mic every week. And then this is good. I just pray Dave Ramsey doesn't lock them in the basement. Because that could really kill the mood of this thing. Cheers, guys. Keep up the good work.
No, only John Acuff's locked in the basement. We're good.
Yeah, we're solid.
Dude,
on that.
Ramsey's basement is really sweet, though. I mean, we'd probably be living better than we've ever lived in our lives if we were locked up down there.
It's got envelopes everywhere.
Envelopes everywhere and flat screens and sweet furniture.
It's all stuff that he bought on clearance.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm super grateful for all the reviews. We're actually up to 93 ratings, 85 stars. So if we could get to 100, I feel like we would have arrived. Mm. If we can get to 100 by next week, just go to iTunes, click, leave us a rating. It's super easy. Thanks for sticking around for the podcast. One thing I forgot to mention at the beginning, special thanks to Resonate Recordings for editing the podcast. They do podcasts, they do sermons. They're a great company. If you need help with your podcast, need help with your sermon, they edit ours, and I'm super grateful to them. Like them on Facebook, facebook.com/resonate recordings. Ted, I forgot to thank you for doing the interview.
It was no problem, man. It was my pleasure. Seriously, thanks for being on my program.
Now, the one thing I was disappointed that you didn't do is ask a question and then use that question as a springboard to talk about something you had been waiting to talk about all.
Oh, totally. Those are my favorite interviews, actually, the ones where I don't have to talk at all, where the host just asks and then answers their own question.
I really like the ones, though, where they make a statement and then just stop talking and you're supposed to pick up where they left off.
That's awesome.
Steven, I see you wrote a book here called Create.
Yeah. So
I did. Yep, I sure did.
Confirmed.
All right, folks. Thanks for sticking with us. Until next time, peace the heck out.
Is life feeling chaotic? I get it. I'm Rachel Wojo, host of the Untangling Life podcast. Don't miss the passionate encouragement and faith-based resources you need to help you clear your head and calm your heart. As Shell says, it feels like Rachel always knows what I need to hear. She keeps it real and is so humble. Her podcast is just the cherry on top. Enjoy Untangling Life with Rachel Wojo on lifeaudio.com or your favorite podcast app now.